Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, WNPR Hartford, and WSHU Fairfield, this is special coverage and a community call-in in the aftermath of the school shooting in Newtown, Connecticut. Hello, everyone. I'm Brian Lehrer at WNYC with WSHU News Director Naomi Starobin. Hi, Naomi. It is a sad day for everyone, obviously, and certainly an unforgettably sad day in our area. Thanks for co-hosting today.
Thank you. Indeed it is, Brian.
And folks, if you live in or near Newtown, we just want to give you a public space in which to say what's in your hearts today or on your minds about the community in which you live or any individuals or what you would like to see come of this horrible tragedy. So our phones are open at 1-800-543-2543. 1-800-543-2543. We also welcome today all of you listening to our local coverage on public radio stations elsewhere in the nation. For your benefit, Newtown is about 60 miles from New York City, an affluent, leafy commuter town for some of its residents. It's also 12 miles from Danbury, 28 miles from Waterbury. And Naomi, what else would you say to people not familiar with Newtown, Connecticut, to just describe the place that's suddenly become known to people all over the world?
Yeah, it's pretty much a suburban Connecticut town. It's very spread out, so low population, big area. The average income is higher by about a third than the Connecticut average. So we're looking at one-acre zoning homes and more and, you know, a comfortable community.
In this hour, we will review what we know about what actually happened at Sandy Hook Elementary School. There were different versions getting around in the fog of the emergency yesterday. And we'll touch on some of the issues this horrifying event inevitably raises, including gun laws and mental health treatment. But largely, we will open the phones to allow you in the community to say what's on your minds or in your hearts today as we mourn the 20 children and 7 grown-ups who were murdered yesterday. And again, this hour is largely to open a public space for you to do that this day after, only one day after, so many were shockingly taken. So again, the phone number, 1-800-543-2543. Just count it down, 1-800-543-2543. Anyone who knows any of the victims or knew the 20-year-old shooter, for that matter, who took his own life after he took all those others, our lines have already filled up, so I'll give you the phone number again later as we get through some of our callers. All we ask, and this is important, is that you don't identify any of the child victims by name, because their names have not been released. So let's continue to respect those families' privacy until they decide the time is right to come forward or their names are officially identified by the police. But you can talk about someone without using a name. But again, if you're in Newtown or anyone in the region, anything that's on your minds or in your hearts, but please respect the privacy of the families whose deceased members' names are not out yet. Let's review what we know and don't know about the facts of the case as we're screening your calls. Of course, police say 20-year-old Adam Lanza shot and killed 20 children and 6 adults at Sandy Hook Elementary School around 9:30 yesterday morning, and then took his own life. He had first killed his mother at their home in Newtown, who was connected with the school. It's unclear at this time whether she was a teacher at the school. That fact seems to be becoming less clear. But one of the most bizarre aspects of the case is that after his killing his mother at home, he then went to her workplace and killed all those children and adults, including the principal and the school psychologist. WNYC's Richard Hake is keeping track of all the details as they emerge. Hi, Richard.
Hey, Brian. We heard from the Connecticut State Police just about 2 hours ago. It was originally scheduled for 8 o'clock in the morning. It ran a bit late where the State Police Lieutenant Paul Vance came out and basically told us that all the victims have been positively identified and a formal list is upcoming. He said that the medical examiner would be providing this list in the form of a press conference momentarily after that press conference. So we're kind of waiting for that. That's the next step in that, in this, the identification, the formal identification, including the victims at the school, including the children, including the gunman, as well as the other woman found at this private residence that, Brian, you're mentioning is the mother. But we'll have a formal confirmation from the medical examiner.
And, Naomi, the gunman wore a bulletproof vest, we are being told, body armor that would make it harder for police to stop him in the act by firing their guns at him. This is a new detail being reported by NPR this morning. Also, authorities say he had three weapons on him, according to NPR, two handguns of the type that police themselves would use, plus a rifle, a .223, a Bushmaster that was the same kind as used in the D.C. sniper shootings in 2001.
Right.
And here's something that might inform or might complicate the gun laws debate that will inevitably result from the shooting. According to the reports this morning, on NPR, these guns were legally purchased by Lanza's mother, who wound up being killed by one of them by her son.
Yeah, that surprised everybody here, I'll tell you that much, and probably many people in Newtown. You know, it's not a gun culture kind of town. There's, you know, I'm sure there are some hunters, perhaps, but these aren't exactly hunting weapons. So bit of a surprise there.
Is there any reporting yet, Naomi, on why Mrs. Lanza would have wanted those weapons, why she wanted them, or how she had previously used them, if at all?
I could surmise, but I don't have anything really to go on.
And Brian, I just want to add that the state police this morning also said that the gunman did force his way into the building. It was unclear whether the door was unlocked, if he just walked in, if someone at the school let the individual into the building. But the police do confirm this morning that the gunman did force his way in somehow. There were reports of lots of broken windows all around the school, but the police also confirmed that many of those broken windows were from the first responding teams coming to the school because they also had to force their way into the building.
And this report changes some words that had been earlier around. And again, this is one of those situations where in the fog of the kind of emergency that we had yesterday, some things are going to be reported incorrectly at first. State police do now say that Lanza forced his way into the school, that people did try to stop him from entering and he forced his way in. There was some earlier report that because he was known, he was just allowed to enter. So for what that's worth. I want to go to WNYC reporter Yasmin Khan, who's in Newtown at St. John's Episcopal Church, where a service is just beginning. Yasmin, hi.
Hi, Brian. Yeah, I'm sitting outside the chapel. It's a sweet little chapel, stone chapel with bright red doors and Christmas wreaths. And, you know, I just want to say how quiet it is in the town. I'm taken by this, and I don't know if it's just because I'm outside of New York City, but there's a line of cars. There's a lot of traffic because there are a lot of people in the town today. There are media everywhere, and it is just so quiet today.
And I've heard the same thing from my reporters on the ground there, quieter than usual.
And Naomi, how does a quiet town react to something like this when people move there for the very quiet of the town? I've heard people say, we live here because we thought it was the safest place in the world.
Yeah, somebody I know who lives on a street where there are lots of very young children who go to that elementary school said, you know, normally she comes home from work and there are kids playing on the street and, you know, it's that suburban life that people go there for. Yesterday there were no kids out on the street. It was eerily quiet, she said.
Let's take a call from DJ in Brookfield, Connecticut. Hi, DJ. Thank you very much for calling in.
Brian, I am sad to hear you on WSHU. I listen to your show all the time going to work on Mondays through Fridays. I'm sad to hear you on my other public broadcasting station, you know.
Well, so am I under these circumstances, of course.
Yeah. As I was telling you, Screener, you know, I'm in Brookfield, Connecticut. I am literally right next door to Newtown. I go fishing in Newtown all the time. I go to a fishing spot that, you know, I have to hike through the woods to get to Lake Lillinona. And it's a great fishing spot. It's a great swimming spot. A lot of the kids come there to swim. And some parents bring their kids there to swim. You know, I am 1 degree separation from these people. 1 degree. My wife used to work at Starbucks in Newtown.
And what do you want? What do you want to say about the community?
You know, it's a great community. You know, we're stunned. You know, whether it's Newtown or Brookfield or Danbury or New Milford, you know, Bethel. I grew up in New York City. All right, I went to school in Washington D.C. I know urban life. Right, I chose up here just for this reason. You know, and it's a shame. It's a shame that it happened out on the West Coast last week. It's a shame that it happened in Arizona. It's a shame that it happened at Virginia Tech. You know, it's all a shame.
And DJ, thank you very much for checking
out. Brian, you want to hear an interesting side note here?
Yeah, go ahead.
The national headquarters for the National Shooting Sports Foundation is in Newtown. It's a trade association for the firearms industry.
Have they given
I don't know what that means. I don't want to draw conclusions, but...
Have they given any public reaction that you're aware of?
I haven't heard anything.
Let's take another call. Here's Ennis in Danbury. Hello, Ennis.
Yes, hello. Thank you so much for taking my call. What I wanted to talk about is an issue of gun control, and this is actually an event that happened before this event in Newtown, where the football player who shot his girlfriend and then shot himself. And what bothered me about that, of course, the event, but when Bob Costa spoke out against for gun control,
yes,
and he was severely chastised for that, I find him to be a very reasonable man, saying something incredibly reasonable. And, you know, here we are, two weeks later, facing this event, and now people are calling for gun control.
Absolutely.
Why are two people's lives, you know, so insignificant, this football player and his girlfriend, and now it's, do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. And, you know, actually we're going to have somebody later in the hour who works with Mayor Bloomberg, who's become kind of the leader of the gun control movement in the United States. And that's a good question to ask him. Does the debate change? And Naomi, I wonder what you think about this. Does the debate change because it's children, as opposed to it being a professional athlete and his girlfriend, or the people who went to the movies in Aurora, Colorado that night? There was a school shooting in the 90s in Scotland at an elementary school, and it was after that that a real handgun law change took place in that country. So you wonder if, because this happened to 20 elementary school kids and some grown-ups there, whether that changes the nature of the discussion.
Well, I think absolutely. You've got, you know, parents leaving their children in what is supposed to be a safe space every single day of the school year. And so it's affected basically every parent who has done that, not just the people involved in the crime.
Carter in Bridgeport, you're on the air. Thank you for calling in, Carter. Hi.
Thank you. This is just a request for a second thoughts on the part of the general public on the attitude that seems to be running around the country these days, where blame the teacher for the failures of whatever happens in the school, and in particular the administrative constrictions that are coming down from the Connecticut State on the Connecticut public teachers these days.
Right, and I don't want to turn this into a debate on teacher evaluations, but we certainly recognize the teachers who were heroic yesterday and protected their students. And, Richard, I also want to recognize the first responders, police and others, EMS workers, who are going to themselves, in many cases, be facing trauma counseling for coming upon such a grisly scene.
And we also heard earlier from the Connecticut State Police saying that crisis intervention teams from Yale New Haven Hospital are being set up all over Newtown. And I don't know if we still have our reporter, WMIC's Yasmin Khan, on the line with us right now, but she was at one of those Yasmin, I'm going to play the tape that you brought us earlier.
Yeah.
Yes, you met a gentleman named Glenn Schicker. His six-year-old daughter actually survived the attack, but he was at this counseling center so early this morning because he wanted to get information on how to tell his daughter that her good friend was one of the young students killed, and this is what he had to say.
She lost her best friend. She lost her best friend yesterday. A sweet little girl who's like a daughter to us as well. And I came here to talk to some counselors to figure out how my wife and I can talk to her about it this morning. This is what I'm going to go home and do right now, I think. And how to be there for each other and for her family.
So, Yasmin, if you're with us, what was that like, meeting parents like this, meeting first responders, meeting, you know, people in Newtown who just came to this area to talk?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, you can hear from that father that his heart is breaking for the little girl who died because you know, he said that obviously their daughters were good friends. So, you know, this little girl was at his house, too, all the time and was like a second daughter to him. And, you know, he said specifically, and it's just his heart, he's just thinking of all these families today, but also of his own daughter. And he feels very angry that her innocence, in a way, has been taken from her, that he has to go home and have this conversation today with her. So obviously it's a hard day. It's a very raw feeling. So and it's like this for so many people. But yeah, he was certainly someone who was very directly affected by this.
And the anger certainly is going to mingle with the sadness of the grief. And we'll be speaking later in the hour with a counselor, a therapist who specializes in these kind of disasters and tragedies and murders, who will take some of your calls as well. Yasmin Khan at St. John's Episcopal Church in Newtown will keep hearing from you during the day. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Yolanda in Norwich, you're on the air. Yolanda, thank you so much for calling. Whoops. Sorry about that. Yolanda, that was my error. Now we've got you.
Okay. No, I just want to thank you for having me on the show, and I just want to give all my condolences to the families, the parents, the staff, the students, the emergency personnel. Everybody did as best as they could yesterday, and I really appreciate it. Being a parent myself and having a preschooler who attends the elementary school here in Norwich. But I guess my question, so to speak, would be in lieu of some information that was aired last night on the program, talking about the Columbine shooting and how it revolutionized the way that they approached this school shooting aspect, and it changed to words like they used last night as active shooter takedowns, and how it has, you know, prompted a more positive response time to minimize casualties. But I guess my question goes further into, and how do we prevent it from happening, and how do we prevent these people from entering into places like schools that we anticipate to be safe for our families and for our children?
Yes, and Yolanda, that's a really good question, and certainly one of the things that disaster preparedness experts keep saying is that schools, even in bucolic communities like this, have to be prepared with security measures, because you never know. And that means do lockdown drills. That means not let people in who are unknown, even in a quiet town. And apparently the shooter here forced his way in, and even in Connecticut and places like Newtown, this is the kind of thing that does and should take place. We'll continue with our special coverage and community call-in in a minute. This is special coverage and a community call-in following the Newtown, Connecticut school shooting. I'm Brian Lehrer at WNYC in New York with Naomi Starobin, news director of WSHU in Fairfield. And on this very sad day in our area, our phones remain open for anyone from Newtown or from the region as a whole for anything you want to say publicly about what's in your hearts or on your minds. Our phone number, 1-800-543-2543. Just count it down from 1-800-543-2543. And again, all we ask is that you not identify any of the child victims by name, since those names have not yet been released, but anything that's on your minds or in your hearts about the victims or the community or the issues this raises, 1-800-543-2543, 1-800-543-2543. Naomi, this, though it seems so out of place in a place like Newtown, is not unique in Connecticut. Connecticut has had a few incidents before of mass shootings, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they're probably at the top of everybody's minds here at a time like this. The latest one of a big enough size was in August of 2010. There was a shooting near Hartford, a beer distribution warehouse. And this was a man who was fired and was disgruntled. He shot and killed eight of his coworkers and then shot himself. So that was as recently, 2 years ago. Back in 98, there was a shooting at Connecticut State Lottery headquarters. Somebody named Matthew Beck, an accountant, shot and killed four lottery officials and then shot himself as well. So I don't think disgruntled employees, frustrated people, perhaps with some mental illness, I don't think they're tied to any particular boundary or state.
And, of course, we don't know the motives of this shooter yet, but we know that he killed his mother, who was somehow tied to the school, and so there's some family situation here of some kind that somehow in his mind got mixed in with the place where she worked or something. And Naomi, people were saying yesterday as a definitive fact that she was a teacher at the school, but I understand that's less certain today?
No, apparently she's not on the staff list of the school. Some people are saying that she might have been a volunteer there, but I don't have that verified.
Let's take another phone call. This is Molly in Minnesota, but who grew up in Newtown. Molly, thank you very much for calling in.
Yes, thank you. I, at the time of the Red Lake Reservation High School shooting, in which a child, Jeff Weiss, killed 10 people.
Where was that? Refresh my memory. Where?
Red Lake, Minnesota, the Red Lake Band of Chippewa.
Uh-huh.
Reservation High School.
Okay.
And
forgive me for not remembering that. Go ahead.
No, that's... Well, anyway, Jeff Weiss, he was 15, a child. He started by killing his grandfather and grandmother, and his grandfather was a reservation police officer, a tribal police officer, and he took his grandfather's service pistol and hunting rifle and went to the school and killed a lot of people. And I was the editor of the Daily Pioneer, the Bemidji Daily newspaper at the time. And I was on the phone doing something else when the receptionist came and put a note in front of my face saying, shooting at Red Lake School. It turns out what sounded like a boy crying called the newspaper. And then so I called the school and nobody answered, and I called the police department and nobody answered. And so then I knew, the police, they've got 10 lines, So I drove up there, and here the ambulances are. Red Lake is about 35 miles north of Bemidji, and
so another
part of our coverage area.
Horrible, horrible such incident.
And I walked into the school. They didn't have the school secured. Things were so confused. I just walked right into the school, and I knew all the police officers, and they said, Molly, go.
So
I did.
and so does this Newtown shooting raise any new issues or just that memory for you?
I'm shaking. I'll never forget it. And the other thing, Red Lake is a small community. The town itself, the whole reservation has got about 10,000 people on it. And
is there anything from your experience And it sounds like there's some, you know, analogous community feeling there in relatively small place. There are about 30,000 in Newtown. But anything from your experience that you think can help the people of Newtown get through this?
Well, I think they are helping themselves. You know, they had the vigils. And what I know about Red Lake is some people wanted to bury their... And, of course, it's a traditional Indian community that follows the traditional religions. And so some of the families wanted everything to be absolutely private. And some of the families wanted everybody to come and pay their respects. So I think what people need to do is be very careful to understand that people grieve differently.
Molly, thank you. I'm going to leave it there. And thank you very much for checking in. I appreciate it. And yes, to refresh everybody's memory, March 21st, 2005, when 16-year-old Jeffrey Weiss killed his grandfather and his grandfather's girlfriend and then drove his grandfather's police vehicle to Red Lake Senior High School, where he shot and killed seven people on the school campus. So, of course, for somebody like Molly from there, very emotional echoes today. With us now, John Feinblatt, chief advisor to New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg for policy and strategic planning. He is also involved with the group Mayors Against Illegal Guns, headed by Mayor Bloomberg and Boston Mayor Thomas Menino. Mr. Feinblatt, thanks very much for giving us a few minutes today.
Certainly, Brian.
The guns used in this crime are reportedly legal, owned by the shooter's mother, who herself, of course, was murdered before he went to the school. If that's true, and your group is Mayors Against Illegal Guns, does that change the nature of your policy response?
Look, Brian, you know, 34 people are killed every single day in the United States by guns. In Obama's next term, 48,000 people will be murdered. This is a issue that this country has to come to terms with, and certainly what happened in Connecticut has broken the nation's heart. And you have to ask, if not now, when will we address the issue of gun violence? And there are things the president could do right now, tomorrow, Monday when he hits the Oval Office. We could confirm an ATF director. We haven't had one for over 6 years. We could make sure that when people are turned down for a Brady background check, that we actually look to see whether these are people who are being prosecuted. If you lie on a background check, that's a federal felony punishable by 5 years in jail. And yet, even though 71,000 of those incidents happen a year, I think the last time we looked at this, only 77 of them were actually prosecuted, despite the fact that we know if you lied about your criminal background on a background check, you're 28% more likely to be arrested in the 5 years following failing the check than in the 5 years before. This is something the president could do immediately. You don't have to go to Congress to make us safer.
And here is President Obama speaking in his Saturday media address.
Any of these neighborhoods could be our own. So we have to come together. And we're going to have to take meaningful action to prevent more tragedies like this from happening, regardless of politics.
Regardless of politics, meaningful action to prevent more tragedies like this from happening. So, John Feinblatt, you're saying there are things he could do unilaterally. Do you get the sense from either anything the president has said, and now that the election is over, and maybe he doesn't have to be as cautious as he was a couple of months ago, that his language indicates he's going to do anything differently than he has in the past?
You know, the president's job is to lead the nation in mourning, but the president's job is also to lead the nation in action. And what we really need is a plan. That's what we haven't had. That's what we need. As I say, there are things he could do unilaterally, and he could go to Congress, and he could also ask for legislation to fix our background check system. We have a background check system in this country that's like Swiss cheese. Even though in the last 10 years, millions of people who have been blocked because they were prohibited purchasers, because they were prior felons or adjudicated mentally ill or too young to buy a gun, only some of our gun purchases go through a background check every year. In fact, 40% of the gun purchases in this country occur without a background check at all. And so if we've got two systems, one where licensed dealers have to have a background check, and the other where private sellers, either at a gun show or on the internet or in the back of a shopping center, don't have to do a background check, yes, where do you think criminals are going to go?
And on the White House website right now, maybe you're aware of this, We the People, which solicits petitions, has a submission urging the Obama administration to produce legislation that limits access to guns, and it's gained over 100,000 signatures in 12 hours. The threshold to get a response from the White House is 25,000 signatures, which the petition passed in just a few hours. So the White House is going to have to respond to that and to people like you in at least some way. Before you go, do you just get any indication relative to something we were discussing earlier in the hour, that because it was children here, because the heartstrings are tugged in a different way by 20 elementary school children, that the policy response to this and the politics of this are going to be any different than after Aurora or after the Wisconsin Temple or after any of the others?
There's no question the nation's heart's been broken. There's no question that should lead to action. But I think what's so interesting, Brian, is the American public has been here and is already here. When you poll gun owners, when you poll NRA members, when you poll citizens of the United States, they want background checks. They think it's not a good idea for people who have been convicted of felonies to have guns. The only people who don't seem to get that message are people in Washington.
John Feinblatt, a policy advisor to New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg and involved with his group called Mayors Against Illegal Guns. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Brian.
And WNYC web editor Caitlin Thompson joins us in the studio for just a minute. We mentioned that one thing that's blowing up on social media, really on the White House website, but 100,000 people have signed this petition. What else is the social media response that you're seeing to yesterday's tragedy?
I think you're absolutely right. First, in the first couple minutes, as details started to come out, the first couple hours, it was about sharing and prayers and blessings. And now, in the past 12, 18 hours, it's become crystallized around a few conversations, something that John Feinblatt was just talking about, in terms of really mobilizing folks in terms of the gun control. There are, obviously a couple of different threads and different political views being represented, but there's a very prominent hashtag going around, today is the day. And this echoes something that we're seeing being shared. There's an essay up on the Daily Beast by David Frum saying every day is the day to discuss gun control, and he's a conservative commentator. So basically what you're seeing is a lot of people wanting to sort of make this the moment.
And let's go back to Naomi Starobin at WSHU in Fairfield. Naomi, I understand that you have a new detail for us about the crime.
Yeah, we're hearing just a little detail about the principal of the school who, as we know, was killed by the gunman, or allegedly killed by the alleged gunman. And that is that she was lunging at the gunman as she and was killed by him as she tried to overtake him. So she basically, in trying to protect the rest of the school, lost her life.
And Brian, I just want to add to that, because I'm also reading from the Associated Press. This is according to town officials in Connecticut. Talking about the principal, apparently she was coming out of a meeting with other administrators when the gunman did force his way into the school and then ran toward her, and then she tried to overtake him.
And the adult victims should not be forgotten here. The principal is Dawn Hochsprung, 47 years old. Her name is known. The school psychologist also died, Mary Sherlock. She was 56. And the mother of the suspect is Nancy Lanza, killed in the home before the suspect, Adam Lanza, allegedly went to the school. And, Caitlin, one more social media note. I'm told that there is a tweet from Rupert Murdoch, of all people, saying that it's time for gun control in the United States.
It does sort of feel like a crystallizing sort of turning point. The amount of folks, like I was just mentioning, David Frum among them, really saying, it does seem like this, maybe it's just the fact that social media is now more prominent and people's initial reactions are more available to us, but it does sort of feel a little bit crystallizing. Unlike Aurora or the Sikh shooting in Wisconsin, obviously, sadly, there are many, many, many moments that we've had in the past couple of years, but this does feel like more of a moment than others, and I think that tweet by Rupert is definitely indicative of what's happening.
Richard Hake.
And Brian, also, I'm just seeing on the Associated Press wires here, besides social media, there's an old-fashioned gun buyback program that just sprung up in New York City right now. Two New York churches have invited gun owners to hand in their weapons, no questions asked. This is at the Mount Olive Baptist Church in the Brownsville neighborhood and the St. Peter's Lutheran Church in the Cypress Hills section. Again, no questions asked. People can turn in their guns for a $200 bank card.
Billy,
and it'll
Naomi, I'm sorry.
Well, I just wanted to say it'll be very interesting to hear what Connecticut's governor, Daniel Malloy, says. He has not been making strong statements in general as he ran for office and since then about gun control, but I'm wondering what he's going to say now.
And how about Connecticut's congressional delegation? We have a brand new senator-elect, Chris Murphy, as well as Senator Lieberman, who used to be an attorney general. Are they strong on this issue?
I haven't heard very strong statements. I mean, everybody's got a reaction to this crime, of course, but it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next few days with the delegation.
Let's take another caller. Billy in Coventry, Connecticut. You're on the air. Billy, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking me. I just want to really, with all the politicalness that's going to be coming out from the shooting, and it seems like there's a lot already, I had a family member involved with the HDI shooting when that occurred. He was luckily not in the building when the shooting occurred, but he and I certainly knew everybody that was involved. And I think it's important to remember that while we're going through all of the details that are going to be going on, it's very painful to hear because while, yes, there's going to be a debate about gun control and gun safety and education, the fact of the matter is that a lot of families are feeling a lot of hurt right now. And they need to know not only that there's going to be difference on a judicial level, but that the community is going to be there for them as well. And in Connecticut, I know that there's a strong community for people who need to grieve and people who need to have respect in the matter as well I'm losing my words.
No, of course. And, you know, we saw President Obama even yesterday, who's always such a cool cucumber, have to compose himself twice in a short statement that he was making. Billy, what kind, and we're going to talk in a couple of minutes to a crisis therapist, but what kind of community support? What do you think people can most do?
It's a natural response that I think everybody will do. It's call. It's, you know, be there for the neighbors and respect if your neighbors don't want to have anybody there, if they want to just be with family. But, like, the most important thing that one can have in that is an understanding of what happened and not a feeling of having anything preached to them, certainly. But definitely a feeling that, yes, we are here for you, and whenever you need to talk, just be there.
Yeah.
Because that's the most important thing, I think.
In fact, Billy, I heard somebody ask a question yesterday about whether they should call the families today if they know somebody who lost a child, or whether it's just too soon and they should first give them their space. And this particular therapist suggested, yes, by all means, do call. They may not even pick up the phone, but just to leave a message and to know that you're thinking of them and keep it brief. But do call if you know somebody. Anyway, thank you for your call and your concern for the individuals. And we'll continue our special program in a minute. This is special coverage and a community call-in following the Newtown, Connecticut school shooting. I'm Brian Lehrer at WNYC in New York with Naomi Starobin, news director of WSHU in Fairfield. And on this very sad day in our area, our phones remain open for anyone from Newtown or from the region as a whole for anything you want to say publicly about what's in your hearts or on your minds. And now, for anybody who wants some advice from a therapist who specializes in this kind of incident, do call us up, 1-800-543-2543, 1-800-543-2543. And one more reminder that we ask you not identify any of the child victims by name, even if you're calling to pay tribute to them, which you can, since those names have not been released. In fact, there is such concern for the privacy of the families from the media that the state has posted a state trooper, Richard Hake, at the home of each of the families that lost a child.
That's right. We heard from the Connecticut State Police Lieutenant Paul Vance earlier today, and he reiterated what he said yesterday, that a trooper would be sort of like a liaison with the family members and officials there in Newtown, Connecticut. He did again this morning to, that was the first thing he said, is to respect the privacy of the families involved in this.
And Naomi Starobin, I understand we have one of your WSHU reporters on the line, Craig Lamolt. You wanna fill us in on what he's been doing?
Well, Craig has been on the ground in Sandy Hook and Newtown all day yesterday. I think he got a quick nap overnight and is back there this afternoon.
Hi, Craig. What's the latest that you have?
Hey, Brian, how you doing? I just arrived again in Sandy Hook. As you can hear, there are police cars screaming by me right now with sirens going. I'm not sure what that is all about. I'm standing right now, actually, in front of an interesting sign. It's an American flag. And on the stripes of the flag, there are names. And it says this flag contains the names of those killed in Sandy Hook School, 12-14-12. Now and forever, it will represent their immortality. We shall never forget them. And, of course, as you were just saying, those names have not been publicly released yet. I won't read the names that are on this flag, but there's also numbers pinned to the flag, and they count up to 27.
Craig, we'll hear back from you later in the day. We want to spend some time talking to and about the families and community in grief and dealing with children from Sandy Hook Elementary School itself or anywhere where young children may be exposed to this horror. With us now is Connie Sanders. She is what's known as a forensic therapist. She's also the daughter of Dave Sanders, who was a victim of the Columbine Massacre in the late 1990s. So, Connie Sanders, thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And before we can help children cope with this, what do we as adults need to do for ourselves or to prepare ourselves to be the most effective parents we can for our children?
The most important thing that people can do is talk to their kids about what they're seeing and what they know. We may think that they don't know what's going on, but it's important to let them talk about what they're seeing and what's being said, because it can create a very big sense of fear for kids. And we make the assumption that they don't know what's going on, and in reality, they do.
And let's take a phone call for you right off the bat. Cynthia in Eastchester, not that far from Newtown. Hi, Cynthia, you're on the air.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I'm a preschool teacher in Westchester County. I have been a preschool teacher for close to 20 years now. So in my experience, I've had families who have had multiple children in my classes. And this kind of event is especially difficult for that kind of family because they have to figure out how do you address the needs of older children who may be discussing this at home, with their friends, in school, and very young children. And there is one website that I thought could be really helpful to parents. It is the website. It's a page on the website of the National Association for the Education of Young Children, and its website is www.naeyc.org/content/ coping-school-shooting. And they have a listing of various sources that can give you information about how do you approach this? How do you deal with this yourself?
So that's a good resource. Let me ask you about one of the particulars. And Cynthia, since you're a preschool teacher, stay on the line for this because this may be very relevant to you. I've heard several experts, Connie, say we want to explicitly reassure our children that they are safe, period. Despite the infinitesimal risk that something could happen someday, don't engage in probabilities or hedges, as if to say this rarely happens, probably won't happen. Just tell them they are safe, this won't happen to you, rather than say there's only a 1 in 100 million chance or whatever it is. Do you agree with that?
You know, I agree with it in a sense that children, they live in a very small world as far as they think that when they see things happening that it could happen to them. It's really important to express to them that they are safe and that you are there for them, and going into the details of how small the chance is, that doesn't mean anything to a child because their world is so small. And they see this on the news, and they think it continues to happen over and over again.
And I think it's particularly relevant, tell me if you agree, for preschool children. Just don't leave any ambiguity. Even though there is an infinitesimal chance, and of course schools are overwhelmingly safe places, and where people who are young do get murdered, it's almost never in their school. Those are just the ones that make the news. Just say you're safe. To the younger the children, the more that's the right advice. Yes?
Absolutely. And going into too much detail with children, it can be a dangerous thing because they really, their ultimate question is, am I going to be okay? Is this going to happen to me? And so just repeating over and over again that they're safe and that the people that care about them are there to protect them, and that they should go to school and focus on their education, that, you know, the adults have got this.
Cynthia, I hope that's helpful.
Yes, I totally agree with her. And the tricky bit is if you have a family with children of varying ages, you have to really think about how do you speak to your older kids in a way that allows them to ask the questions they need to ask and get real straight answers from you, but which will shield your younger children from information that they just can't process.
Cynthia, thank you for calling, and good luck when you go back to preschool on Monday. Naomi, did you want to ask a question?
Well, I've heard psychologists say this, that you make that promise to a child, and if, God forbid, something terrible does happen, the worst part of that won't be that you lied. You know, if there's a crisis in a child's life, it's the crisis that'll be up, you know, to top of their mind, and the fact that you lied will be something that won't be part of that crisis.
It's a really, really good point to put that lie in perspective. Monica in Hartford, you're on the air. Monica, thank you for calling in.
Yes, sir. I just want to give my condolences to the family. And I can say I can relate to what they're going through because my daughter was gunned down in Washington last June.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
She went to graduate school and, you know, she was just walking to her car and she was gunned down. Thank God she's not dead. She's alive. But she had very bad injuries. Now, you know, she's well. And I just have one more comment. I think ever since they took the Bible out of the curriculum, these kids are worse than ever. The Bible is a discipline book, and I don't see why it is not used in the curriculum.
Monica, thank you. I'm going to leave it there. And, of course, there are all kinds of issues we could get into. Gun control, mental health access, religion in schools. And, of course, people would say, well, maybe it's values in the schools. Maybe it's not the Bible of any one particular religion. Maybe values aren't being taught as much as they need to. Or maybe, you know, some people will say it is the Bible. Let's take another phone call. Jennifer in Swampscott, Massachusetts. Jennifer, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you.
Really, I see myself in this in a couple of different ways as a mother and as a teacher and just as a human being. But one of the things that really stands out for to me as a high school teacher is that, by all accounts, it seems that this young man may have been in high school just a few years ago. He could have been one of my students. And what we can do to sort of give these students that may be on the sort of the margins of the social lives and social aspects of high school, how we can identify them sooner. And so although I see myself in the grieving parents, I also see myself as a teacher in helping these students and sort of identifying them before they do get out of our hands and before they become more angry and more sort of distant from society as a whole.
Thank you very much, Jennifer. And so to Connie, as a forensic therapist, do you think we've made a lot of progress since the Columbine days, when I think it really became more a part of our national vocabulary than it was, to, you know, be able to talk about looking for the red flags, for the danger signs, for the kids who are doing some of the things that may indicate that they may go off in this kind of a way? You know, does that need to be at the heart of the national conversation, at least as much as gun control?
You know, a lot of progress has been made when you look at how the police respond to this type of thing. There have been some amazing changes. There were also some mistakes. You know, zero tolerance didn't quite work the way that we thought it would, but I think the awareness alone has helped people and kids realize that this type of thing can happen, especially in the high schools, and what to look for, and that it's okay to report the bullying hotlines, things like that. I think we have made progress. Obviously, there's still more to be made. As far as identifying these people beforehand, that's a really difficult task. And, you know, part of what I do is I treat people that have been convicted of a violent crime, and they do get the help. At that point, they are evaluated, but that's one step too late.
To that point, today's New York Times reminds us of an analysis that they did in the year 2000 of 100 school shootings, and more than half of the shooters had given other people clues along the way as to where and when they would act and against whom. A third of the eventual shooters were brought to the attention of authorities before their crimes, but the authorities rebuffed the requests to take action in advance and were understandably cautious about acting against people who haven't done anything yet. And yet there has to be something in between a police state and doing nothing about people who seem to be walking time bombs.
Well, I think it all comes down to education about what to look for and what are the concerning factors. The lack of support, mental illness, there are several things that play into somebody losing it in this sense. And I think that educating people about the warning signs, and then if enough people say that there's something that needs to be done, something will be done. It's when one person reports and nobody else will report it that they have to assume maybe this is, you know, something personal, that this isn't maybe this person needing help. So the more professionals involved and the more family involved and the more of a support system that says, hey, you know, things aren't okay with you right now, what can we do? That, I think, is where we will continue to make progress.
Now, suddenly, almost half our call board is filled up with people from Sandy Hook, Connecticut. We're going to put three of those people on together right now, Andy, Joyce, and Michelle, all from Sandy Hook. So I'm going to have to ask each of you to keep it brief, but there's obviously a strong identification here. Maybe after Sandy, there's a strong identification in this community. Joyce, would you like to start us off?
Sure, and I'll try to keep it brief, but I think that my perspective is one that I'm not hearing a lot of. And while my heart breaks for all the victims, the kids and the parents and the adults, of course, it's heartbreaking. But I happen to have a loved one who has a mental illness, and I know that the young man who did the shooting was not diagnosed, but I can't help but think that anyone who's in that much pain and does something like that, clearly there's something very wrong.
And I don't think we know yet whether he's been diagnosed or not, but still.
But my heart breaks also for his father and his family, who I'm sure loved this kid
absolutely
as he was growing up.
Yeah.
He's not a monster. He's not evil. there was an illness there, I'm sure. I'm sure that's going to have to, I mean, come on, think about it. Anyone in their rational mind would not do something like this. And irrational behavior is often right. associated most of the time with mental illness. So I just want people to realize that those of us with loved ones with mental illness, we hear the words monster and evil, and we all know very well that an untreated mental illness can produce, you know, very bad behaviors, but it's an illness.
In fact, here I was going to bring up this very point, because here is Governor Malloy speaking yesterday, and listen to his language.
Evil visited this community today, and it's too early to speak of recovery, but each parent, each sibling, each member of the family has to understand that Connecticut, we're all in this together. We'll do whatever we can to overcome this event. We will get through it.
So, Connie, as a forensic therapist, what do you make of labeling acts like this evil? Because honestly, my thoughts went where Joyce's went, which is certainly they are evil in a simple duality between good and evil. But does it make it harder for us to look at the concrete, real-world issues of mental illness and treatment and prevention and intervention when we write it off like that?
I do kind of feel like that writes it off. I really feel that the act was evil. The person that did it, I would agree. You know, there's some level of mental illness, diagnosed or not. And I think that it's important to draw attention to why it happened, not what happened.
Let's
and
go
also,
back to
isn't there,
Naomi,
isn't there
go
something,
ahead.
Yeah, isn't there something to be said, although impossible to quantify, about the professional, the mental health professionals who prevent such things, you know, who deal appropriately with people and do what they need to do to keep them from acting out like this?
Andy and Sandy Hook, let's get a quick comment from you. Hi, Andy, real quick.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I agree with Joyce. I think she brings up a good point that a lot of people have missed, and that's that, you know, we can't just say this happened because of gun control laws. There's a whole slew of different things that are involved, and we need to really think about that intelligently before we just start pointing fingers.
Thank you very much. And Michelle in Sandy Hook. Hi. Sorry to say we've got about 20 seconds for you.
Okay. A colleague asked me, is a child going to be safe anywhere if this could happen there? And my answer is no. If this could happen here, you know, then maybe our children aren't safe anywhere. And I'd like to call attention to the fact that the guns that were used were not purchased by someone who was screened, you know, or evaluated. They were purchased by someone else. You know, I think we need to think about whether assault-type weapons and rapidly repeating weapons are really appropriate for civilian purchase.
Michelle, you're going to have the last word, which is that, because we are now out of time. Listeners on all our stations, if you want to continue the conversation via our Facebook page, you can, facebook.com/BrianLehrWNYC. And, of course, all our public radio stations will continue our coverage. This has been special coverage and a community call-in following the Newtown, Connecticut shooting. I'm Brian Lehrer at WNYC in New York with Naomi Starobin, news director of WSHU in Fairfield. For us and our partners at WNPR in Hartford, our hearts go out to any one of you personally affected. Thank you for listening.